This is the BBC, with the Daily Minutes podcast. Oh no, it isn't. I mean, this is the Daily Minutes podcast. This is, however, not the BBC.
Daily Minutes podcast number 1675 with today's bulletin, 16 July 2019. This is a bulletin for Tuesday. This podcast today will be both in Dutch and English. Deze podcast is zowel in het Engels als in het Nederlands. Today we have data at the end of the show, both SSTV and FLDigi. First we have a segment in Dutch, after that the third episode of the story of Swinging Radio England. Today we start in Dutch, we beginnen vandaag in het Nederlands. Podcasts met waargebeurde misdaadverhalen zijn de meest populaire categorie podcasts. In het Engelse taaldomein is dat genre al een aantal jaren gevestigd. In Nederland komt het de laatste maanden ook sterk op. Ik heb zelf een jaar of 8 tot 10 geleden meerdere van dergelijke verhalen geschreven, artikelen eigenlijk, want ze zijn waar gebeurd. Vandaag breng ik één van die artikelen, lichtjes bewerkt, voor gebruik in de podcast. Ja, let niet op het gestommel op de achtergrond. Mijn benedenbuurman die heeft een timmerbedrijfje en die maakt de meest prachtige meubels en soms is dat hoorbaar. Dit is het waargebeurde verhaal van Charles Sobrey, de man die dacht te glad te zijn voor welk juridisch systeem ook en die dat tientallen jaren lang ook nog waarmaakte. Totdat overmoed hem uiteindelijk ten val bracht. Sobrey zit nu een levenslange gevangenisstraf uit in Nepal. Het verhaal van een man met een ongelooflijke intelligentie en onvoorstelbare talenten. Als hij die op een andere manier had ingezet, dan had hij ongetwijfeld veel voor de wereld kunnen betekenen. Bijvoorbeeld als gewiekste topdiplomaat. Het verhaal van voluit Hotshant Boanani Gurumukh Charles Sobrey, die in de eerste jaren van zijn leven Gurumukh Sobrey genoemd werd, begint in 1944 toen Sobrey op 6 april geboren werd in wat toen nog Frans Indochina heette, in de plaats Saigon. Dat wil zeggen in het huidige Vietnam, respectievelijk Ho Chi Minh stad. Sobrey's moeder was ongetrouwd en Vietnamees, zijn vader kwam uit India. Toen Gurumukh nog klein was, werd het gezin door zijn vader verlaten. In eerste instantie was Gurumukh daardoor stateloos, maar daar kwam verandering in door de nieuwe vriend van de moeder, een Franse legerluitenant die in de regio gestationeerd was en die de kleine Gurumukh adopteerde. Dat belette de ouders niet om de kleine Gurumukh achter te stellen bij de andere kinderen die het paar later gezamenlijk kreeg. Vanwege het beroep van zijn pleegvader werd er geregeld verhuisd. Dan weer woonde het gezin in Frankrijk, dan weer in Frans Indochina. Charles kreeg hierdoor nooit de gelegenheid om zich ergens thuis te voelen. Als teenager ontwikkelde hij vervolgens persoonlijkheidsproblemen en hij werd actief in de kleine criminaliteit. Als 19-jarige kreeg Sobrey voor het eerst gevangenisstraf. Hij moest vanwege een inbraak bij de Parijse Poissy-gevangenis zich melden om zich daar te laten opsluiten. Charles was inmiddels een meesterlijk manipulator die uit iedere situatie wel een slaatje wist te slaan of er in elk geval geen vervelende tijd had. Hij wist de leiding van de gevangenissen bijvoorbeeld toe over te halen dat hij allerlei gunsten had die de andere gevangenen niet hadden, zoals bijvoorbeeld de boeken die hij in zijn cel mocht bewaren, wat gewoonlijk voor gevangenen verboden was. Tijdens zijn gevangenschap nabij Parijs wist Sobrey zich geliefd te maken bij een rijke gevangenisvrijwilliger, Félie Descogne, met wie hij vriendschap sloot. Nadat hij voorwaardelijk vrijkwam, ging Sobrey bij Descogne inwonen. Zijn tijd verdeelde hij tussen zijn contacten met de High Society van Parijs en de contacten die hij met de Parijse onderwereld had. Hij vergaarde al snel rijkdom door een aantal zwendelpraktijken en inbraken. Gedurende deze periode ontmoette hij Chantal Compagnon, met wie hij een relatie begon. Chantal kwam uit een gegoede conservatieve familie in Parijs. Sobrey vroeg haar ten huwelijk, maar werd nog diezelfde avond gearresteerd omdat hij de politie van zich af had weten te schudden terwijl hij in een gestolen auto reed. Charles werd hierop veroordeeld tot 8 maanden celstraf in dezelfde Poissy-gevangenis waar hij al eerder zat. Chantal liet hem echter niet in de steek en bleef hem in de gevangenis bezoeken. Kort na zijn vrijlating zijn ze getrouwd. Omdat de verdenkingen tegen Sobrey zich bleven opstapelen, besloot het stel hun verblijf in Frankrijk te verruilen voor Azië, om zo te voorkomen dat Charles opnieuw zou worden gearresteerd. Chantal was inmiddels zwanger. Via het Oostblok en met valse papieren werd ze naar Bombay in India gereisd, waar het stel in 1970 aankwam. Onderweg werden voortdurend mensen beroofd met wie het stel tijdens hun reis kort daarvoor bevriend was geraakt. Chantal beviel in Bombay van hun dochter. In Bombay maakte het stel een goede indruk onder de daar wonende expertgemeenschap. In de tussentijd verdiende Sobhraja zijn geld door aan de lopende band auto's te stelen en door smokkel. De winst hiervan ging echter op aan de toenemende gokverslaving van Charles. In hetzelfde jaar werd Charles er gearresteerd wegens een mislukte gewapende overval op een juwelierswinkel in Hotel Ashoka. Sobhraja wist echter te ontsnappen met Chantals hulp door zich voor te doen alsof hij ziek was. Beiden werden echter korte tijd later weer gearresteerd. Sobhraja's vader in Saigon leende hem vervolgens het geld om zijn borgtocht te betalen en kort daarna vluchtte hij naar Kabul in Afghanistan. Nou had ik dus eigenlijk nog meer delen van Charles Sobhraja, maar die kan ik dus niet vinden. Ik dacht eigenlijk dat ik met deze twee delen alles had, maar ja, er is nog veel meer over die man te vertellen. Ik moet eens kijken of ik die verhalen nog kan opsnorren, anders dan moet ik het een keer opnieuw optekenen. Dat is toch wel leuk, het is niet zo'n fantastisch verhaal, maar het is toch wel indrukwekkend om het vervolg ook te horen.
Left at that time, because Johnny had moved on to Radio Caroline, and the others had all gone their various ways. And yes, I was the only original left. So of course it was my honour, if you can call it that, to do the close down programme. I wouldn't want to do it again. It was an awful experience.
From Phil Martin, from Errol Bruce, from Bruce Wayne, and Roger, you're the oldest man here. Come on around and say the final words before we say goodbye for SRE, Swingin' Radio England.
Put away my handkerchief.
Oh, well, thanks, and user Bill Bluebird, Bunches, for moving in, but I should be at the Uppercut Discotheque 3 nights a week, which is in London, so come down there. That's a free plug for him, no, but this big boxer guy runs it, Billy Walker, and he says, if I don't work there, he's going to smash my face in. No, but anyway, I want to hope you'll come down there and see me, and thanks for tuning in for 6 very vast months. So from Roger Day, hi, hello, are you, and bye, hello, are you tonight. Bye-bye.
Although the laissez-faire was still broadcasting, Radio England was gone. Philip Birch remembers speaking to the Texan backer who had left the Radio London board to set up Radio England. Those claims that he would show Philip Birch how a station should be run seemed pretty empty now.
To his eternal credit, he phoned me up one day and he said, I don't often say this in life, but you were right and I was wrong. Because it didn't, Radio England didn't work out, you know. It was rather an exciting venture. The big difference between his view and my view was that he was not in touch with the British people. That was the difference between his approach and mine. And so I think that he, with Radio England, tried to imitate American radio stations without any recognition that the British audience had been brought up in a slightly different way. They had a different background, a different attitude towards broadcasting. That needed to be taken into consideration. And as I say, to his great credit, he did concede. He'd made a mess of it.
Britain Radio and the new Radio Dolphin continued broadcasting.
Peter van den Hoven presenteert de middagshow van Radio Dolphin op 227 meter. Radio Dolphin.
Around the clock, for all the best in music, turn to us. Around the clock, for news and information, turn to us. Around the clock, for sounds of the smart set. Now don't you forget, turn to Hallmark of Quality Britain Radio.
You're listening to Britain Radio, 355 meters in the medium wave band. This is Britain Radio, up-to-the-minute news. Tom Cooper reporting the news at 9 o'clock. The Supervisors and Technicians Union is to start legal action to challenge the government's order to stop Thorn Electrical Industries paying its members an increase. The union's general secretary, Mr. Clyde Jenkins, said that they've advised that the order might be ineffective and were going to test it out. In Italy, troops have been working through the night repairing the broken dikes. The river is continuing to rise and more storms are forecast. It'll be rather warm in England and Wales today. That's the Britain Radio News at 9 o'clock. Tom Cooper reporting. Next news on the hour.
And hi, hello, and how are you? This is Alan Black welcoming you to the Tuesday morning edition of... Yes, indeed, what is the title? It's Morning Serenade, of course. How could I make such a mistake? I'm not awake yet. That's the trouble, you see. It's 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. I know I should be awake, but it'll take me a few more minutes to wake up. And while I do, why don't we hear something from Cliff Richard in Latin Star Zone. Here he is with Esso Besso.
As the new year of 1967 began, the Don Pearson Bill Vick management team, who had run the laissez-faire from the beginning, began to falter. The Radio England Britain Radio project, which had begun with such high hopes, had so far been a sad tale of failure and disappointment. Amid speculation of financial irregularities and growing unease by the original backers, pressure was being applied on Pierre Vic to hand over the management of the ship. The new managing director was to appear very soon, and from quite an unexpected direction.
390 time is now just after 6 o'clock. Radio 390, presenting Eve, the woman's magazine of the air, takes you stateside.
The company that runs it, the managing director and the secretary, face summonses for unlawfully using a wireless transmitter without a license.
When the hearing started, Sir Peter Rawlinson QC, is appearing for Radio 390, immediately...
Radio 390 had been receiving its share of troubles, with a protracted court case brought about by the British Post Office. The trial centered around whether 390's Red Sands Tower was within territorial waters. The managing director of 390 was Ted Albury, a former colonel in the Army Intelligence Corps, and later to achieve a great deal of success as a writer. Ted remembers his departure from 390 after a boardroom disagreement. Britt Wagner, the Swedish pirate radio station owner, had offered to rent 390 her radio ship, the Cheetah 2.
I was offered then by the Swedish lady the boat, because it was obvious that we would be safer on the boat because of this case in court. We were more vulnerable to attack by the post office and the law in general than somebody on a boat. And my fellow directors wouldn't agree to letting this lady share in our profits for having the boat and its equipment for nothing. And at that point, I walked out.
Ted Albury was soon to find himself running a radio ship, not the Cheetah 2, but the Laissez-Faire.
Well, the people who owned and ran the Laissez-Faire had been in touch with me on several occasions saying, you know, is there something that we could do to merge or, you know, have you run our operation for us? I'd put this up to my fellow directors who wouldn't have any of it. So having had this contact fairly frequently, and I liked their attitude because the people who owned that operation actually cared about radio. They were gung-ho, they were mainly Texans, and I rather liked them, and once I was working for them, I liked them even more. I think what was typical of them was when I was considering moving to them, when all this hoo-ha was going on the board of Radio 390, I said, well, I'd like to have a look through your books and your records and so on, which they let me do. And they said, you know, what do you advise? And I said, quite frankly, I advise you not to throw good money after bad, because you're merely going to lose more money by hanging on until the act comes in. And they said, for heaven's sake, you know, we're Texan gentlemen. How much money would it take to hang on till the end? And I told them, and it was far more than had ever gone into Radio 390. And they said, yes, all right, well, if you'll run it, we'll put that money up for you to continue running it. And I was very impressed by that.
Ted Albury left 390 to set up his own company, Carstead Advertising, together with John Withers, who coincidentally was Tony Windsor's brother. From now on, Britain Radio and Radio Dolphin would be run by them. Britain Radio would be renamed Radio 355, and it would adopt the same format as 390. Immediately, Jack Curtis, Britain Radio's general manager, resigned for, as he put it,
professional and personal reasons.
Ted Albury had called Britain Radio's sound a lucky dip. Curtis had retaliated by calling the proposed program format of 355
Stone Age Radio. It's a series of segmented dirges stitched together by sterile announcements.
Another drama was soon to unfold itself around the laissez-faire. The American captain had left around this time and had been replaced by an English captain. Dave McKay takes up the story.
He went off the ship for a weekend, and during the period of time that he left the ship, our first mate, who was also English, jumped ship because he was offered a deep sea job. Also, we'd had one of our two marine engineers who had failed to return also from leave. So the ship as such was down to the Dutch broadcasting crew, our two English transmitter engineers, the English broadcasting crew for Britain Radio, a couple of deck boys, one engineer for the marine side, and a cook. It wasn't a particularly pleasant winter. We'd had one or two periods where the North Sea was fairly calm, but we got caught in a spring tide. That spring tide was followed by a force 8 to force 9 gale, and the ship took a tremendous pounding. We didn't have a really experienced seaman on board to decide precisely what to do in terms of facing the ship into a particular direction. But what happened was the wind pressure, coupled with the buffeting on the ship, started breaking the stainless steel guy lines that held our mast, which I believe was 180 odd feet in height. And after a number of hours, the top 83 feet sheared off. That brought down with it the two cage aerials that we use for transmission. And the tangle of guy lines, coupled with the aerials themselves and this 83 feet that came crashing down, fell into the sea, created a great deal of drag, which meant that the ship took on quite an alarming list, about 15 degrees. To try and prevent this furtherance of damage, we got the engine started and we tried to face the ship out of the prevailing gale. We got into wet weather clothing, and we managed to lash the wreckage. We couldn't cut it free, but we managed to lash it to the side of the ship so that the ship didn't take on quite such an alarming list. We had alerted the Coast Guards, who had indeed in turn alerted the lifeboats. We thought at one stage we might need to use the lifeboat service, and the Manston Air Sea Rescue helicopter came out and took a peep at us as well. But fortunately the weather calmed down just a little bit, and we managed to make things secure enough. Interestingly enough and funnily enough, when the aerials came down into the sea, the transmitter system should have switched off automatically. It didn't, and there were one or two smoulderings on the deck transformer that served the two aerial cages. We did, in fact, switch the transmitters off manually, but we forgot to tell the Radio Dolphin disc jockeys, or indeed the Britain Radio disc jockeys, that we were off air, and for something like 2 hours they continued broadcasting while these quite horrendous events were happening on deck.
Ted Albury also remembers this disaster.
The moment I took over, the very first piece of news that I had, we had very posh offices then in Curzon Street, very ornate after my Pimlico place with the snow coming through the roof. Beautiful rooms and a beautiful garden at the back. And I felt very lost in that. And as I stepped through the door on the very first morning I went there, there was the message waiting to say that the boat had been dismasted. Now, what shall we do now? And there were two of the Texans over. And it looked like, you know, one more reason not to go ahead, but no way.
So the Texans were determined to see the station back on the air again with Ted Albury in control. Back on board the ship, Dave McKay was preparing for a trip to the Weissmuller ship repair yard in Holland.
Our skipper came back on board. Messages from London flashed out to the ship. We had one or two visitors to assess the damage. And then most of the English and indeed Dutch disc jockeys were summoned off the ship. I remember that I was allowed to remain on board to look after the radio side with our two transmitter engineers, Ted Walters and Bob Giddes. And I think Alan Black remained on board as well for a while. We received instructions to up anchor and sail to the Weissmuller yard at Zaandam near Amsterdam. And it was very much a case, once again, of all hands to the pump, because we didn't have adequate ship's crew to man the thing. So it was a case of those of us on the broadcasting side that still remained on board ship to take our turns at the wheel and do our shifts at the wheel to drive the boat across to Holland. We went through the lock system, and we hove to in the Weissmuller yard at Zaandam. And obviously the wreckage that remained on deck was in fact cut away so that the repair work could be assessed. Dutch customs were very, very, very interesting. They came on board and they decided to seal off the transmitter room and the studios. They sealed the transmitter room off quite well. They didn't, in fact, seal the studios off at all well. And indeed, as time weighed quite heavy on our hands during that refit period, that meant that to entertain ourselves, we used to go down into the studios and play records and then put the custom seals on back afterwards, after we'd finished.
One of the original backers, and the person who had supervised most of the original installation, Tom Denahar, flew over from Texas to visit the Weissmuller yard. He was there to supervise the new mast going up, and soon things began to move again. Dave McKay.
Eventually, the monies came through. A large floating crane was brought alongside the ship. The new section of the mast was installed. The aerials were replaced. Not quite, I remember, to our chief engineer's specification, but sufficient for us to get back on the air. However, the one thing we did manage to do with the transmitters on the laissez-faire was we used to run them at very high modulation. Certainly very high modulation in comparison to BBC land-based transmitters, which meant that for a comparatively small amount of power, we could get a very clean signal. But we were out of service completely for about 6 weeks in total.
Soon the ship was back in position, but the format was going to be radically different. Ted Albury planned to emulate his own successful formula on Radio 390, a formula which he had dreamed up on the kitchen table of his farmhouse in Romney Marsh. Primarily, 390 had aimed at women listeners with cultured and softly spoken announcers, quite unlike any of the other pirate stations.
Your Continental Cabaret was introduced by Mark Hamilton. Our next program follows in just a few moments. Tonight's edition of The Voice of Business covers a range of subjects of interest to farmers and agricultural engineers. If you're a farmer or have friends who are farmers, remember Friday's Voice of Business becomes The Voice of Agribusiness. Tonight at 7:30.
Dave McKay remembers how they heard about the planned format changes on the laissez-faire.
Interestingly enough, the first thing we heard was that we were going to get four or five of the disc jockeys from 390. And that included David Allen, who's now, of course, doing country and western programs and continuity for BBC television, Stephen West, and a few others. Now, they brought with them the 390 radio format. Now, that was a patchwork quilt of radio programs, 15 minutes of keyboard cavalcade, followed by 15 minutes of something lightly classical. Perhaps it was called intermezzo, and so on and so forth. And the chief announcer, yes, Radio 390 had announcers, not disc jockeys, that was Stephen West. And Stephen West came on board with the full authority to introduce this 390 format on Radio 355. Alan Black and myself didn't take too kindly to the change in format, the move away from easy listening, middle of the road personality strip programming into this patchwork quilt of broadcasting that had been so successful. We used to call the start of broadcasting from 390, we used to call it Deep Pile Radio, because it was rumoured that on 390 they were luxuriously appointed even to having thick pile carpeting in the record library, which was a luxury that we didn't have on board the ship. Though I must admit the laissez-faire was not only well equipped but very comfortable. So the Radio 355 format with the announcers, part of which were us, Alan Black and myself, and some of the 390 announcers, that went on the air. It didn't work. It didn't have that sort of sterile, clinical sound that 390 had, because we were on a boat and we had generators rumbling and tenders that bashed into the side and occasionally made turntables jump, and most of them were appallingly seasick. That was another problem. They've been used to this life of comparative luxury on board of the tower, and they didn't take too kindly to the fact that we were at the mercy of the North Sea weather. This format from 390, which works supremely well on a stable fort, did not work on a bucking bronco in the middle of the North Sea. And Ted Albury, he in fact realized this after a few weeks. His personal assistant and general manager, John Withers, was half-brother to somebody who started off his radio career as Tony Withers and later became Tony Windsor. Now, John Withers employed Tony Windsor to come out and take control of the radio output on the laissez-faire. Tony Windsor had recently left Big L, Radio London, and a few weeks later he joined us on board the ship. Now, he took one look and one listen to the sort of radio that we've been trying to emulate in terms of the station 390, and he said, this is no good, this isn't going to work. Those that can hold down 3-hour radio strips can stay, and those that can't can go. Well, this meant that most of the 390 boys that came out to operate 355 in its revised format, they weren't able to sustain radio for 3 hours at a time. They'd been used to 15 minutes of this and half an hour of that, and they just couldn't get to grips with it. So, with a comparatively short period of time, we had a new broadcasting crew. TW brought forth basically the old Britain radio format, and we took on Mark Sloan, Martin Kane. Phil Martin rejoined us. There was myself, Dave McKay, and Alan Black. Also, we brought Tony Meehan down from Radio Scotland, and Jack McLaughlin. And we put the clock back, as it were, to the bright and breezy, easy-listening, middle-of-the-road format of Britain Radio, but it was called Radio 355.
This is Tony Windsor introducing yet another star disc jockey on the new Better Music Fighter Broadcasting Station 355.
This is Dave McKay, and I'm on each day between 3 and 6 in the afternoon, so I look forward to your company on 355.
This is Radio 355. It's just a few seconds after 9 o'clock, and of course the time we've all been waiting for, time for the TW Show.
Hello. Well, down came a chumbuck to drink from the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and he gobbled him a tea. He stuffed the jolly chumbuck into his old tucker bag. He come a waltzing Matilda with me once more now. Waltzing Matilda.
Thanks very much, Alan Beck. It was a great show this morning. And good morning to you, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and a warm welcome to the TW Show. We go right through till 12 noon. We're going to have that break at coffee at 11. I hope you can join us on this, which is probably for you a very busy Friday. We're all very fit and well on board the ship here, and I hope the majority of people out there are fit and well, top of the world this morning. Those who aren't, those ill in hospital, and those at home will get round to saying hello to you a little later on in the show. Brotherville Band, Finchley Central.
Martin Kane had also worked on a fort, but he remembers conditions on 355 being a big improvement on those he had experienced on the Knock John.
For start, the accommodation, though on 355 it wasn't spectacular, compared with some of the other ships, it was certainly quite nice. The cabins had been built out of wood in something of a shanty town towards the bows of the ship, and you had funny steps and different layers, but nevertheless the accommodation was there and the beds were comfortable. You had three hot meals a day, and you had stewards and cooks and people to look after you. The equipment was, I'll say, about 100% better than that on Radio Essex, which was mainly amateur or semi-professional equipment that was used there. 355 had, at that time, the latest equipment that was available. It was many times better, and you could do far better show with far less effort.
Although the equipment made it easy to do a good show, it wasn't quite so easy to get out to the ship because of the tender arrangements, as Martin Kane explains.
Our situation was that to economise, rather than have each ship having its own tender going out independently every day, on certain days of the week, one tender did the whole bus trip and went to all three. Unfortunately, 355 was the last one at the end of the run. So if you went to 355, you had to stop at London first, then Caroline, and then 355. Likewise, their DJs had to come and see us occasionally. But if it was fairly rough, as it frequently was, it was sometimes a bit risky jumping on board these ships. The captain of the tender advised you to stay on board and get the transaction and the visit the quickest possible, then to carry on.
Did you get out of bed gladly this morning? Well, if so, either you had a bucket of cold water poured over you, or perhaps you heard the Martin Kane Breakfast Show on Radio 355. Certainly a more comfortable way to wake up. So follow the instinct of other lively souls. Arouse your brain with Martin Kane on the 355 Breakfast Show, starting at 6.
Radio 355 was making progress under Ted Albury and Tony Windsor. So what was next? Dave McKay.
Tony Windsor then turned his attention to the Dutch side of the station, which was still operating a franchised operation from a sales point of view in Amsterdam. And we looked at the sound of Dolphin, and we realized that it was having very little impression on the Dutch radio market.
Radio Dolfijn op 227 meter. Gezellige muziek van 's morgens 6 uur tot 's avonds 12 uur.
TW said, we have got to try and beat our competitors at their own game. Our main competitor on the Dutch side was Radio Veronica. So Dolfijn closed. And the following morning, Radio 227, swinging radio 227. Yes, you guessed it. It was basically the old Radio England, swinging Radio England format, but in Dutch. And within 2 weeks of turning Dolfijn into a swinging radio 227, we had Veronica on the run. The Dutch loved it.
Swinging radio 227. This is Party Swinging Drive. My word, it's my pleasure to be here as well.
Yeah. Oh, can you tell something about yourself?
Oh, that on a pop of Fab 40 station, indeed, called City. Radio City, or the old 299 Tower of Power.
Yeah, and was there a lot such on that?
Originally, yes, it started off as radio such, but was taken over, you know, bigger transmitter and everything, and a Fab 40 format, just like 227. Remember this golden classic. Swinging radio.
So the Dutch station on the laissez-faire was renamed Radio 227, with some familiar Dutch names like Lex Harding, Tom Collins, and some familiar jingles put together by Britain Radio's Dave McKay.
Tony Windsor strolled into the commercial production studio, which was another studio that we had on board the ship one evening, and he said, I want to give Radio 227 a new image. We need a new jingle package. What can you do? And I went through just about every reel of tape on the radio station. And I said, well, look, you are going in for Dutch Top 40. Therefore, we've got to have a Dutch Top 40 jingle-type package. The best thing we can do under the circumstances is to take a look, take a listen at the PAMS jingles that had originally been made for Swinging Radio England and see if we can revamp them with the correct title and the correct frequency. And I sat in the production studio from 11 o'clock one night until just before 6 o'clock the following morning, when swinging radio Tveitveseven came on air, literally hacking the old England jingles apart and adding in an appalling English-stroke-Dutch accent, Tveitveseven. Some of them were done in English. They didn't sound right in Dutch, and certainly not my Dutch.
Swingin' radio
227,
where the action is.
So whilst Radio 227 battled for the Dutch audience with Radio Veronica, Radio 355 was competing with a whole armada of English pirate ships for both audience figures and advertising revenue.
This is Radio 355, Britain's brighter broadcasting station, where the time now is 9 o'clock.
New on the scene is Senator, the cool cigar with the white holder. The white holder with the cool flow filter that lets the flavor through.
Cool Senator.
The new cigar with the cool flow filter that lets the flavor through.
Cool Senator.
£3 for £5.
355 was not attracting anywhere near the amount of advertising that 390 or even Britain Radio had done. But there was still another ace that could provide income for the station.
We certainly weren't handling the advertising on 355, the English advertising on 355, that we had in the days of Britain Radio, where the advertising book was extremely full. We still had a certain amount of religion. Now, you know what I mean by broadcast religion. These American religious programs, the World Tomorrow, and programs of that ilk.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong. Send your letters to BCM Ambassador, London WC1. Again, the mailing address is BCM Ambassador, London WC1.
These, I suppose by our terms today, these were sponsored programs. They were whole chunks of the program schedule that were sold. And
title music is by Croatian artist Blasko and is published under Creative Commons. You can find this podcast on dmpodcast.net, DM is for Daily Minutes, and on several other platforms. De internetfaciliteiten en studio hardware voor Daily Minutes worden gesponsord door 70MHzShop.nl, 70MHzShop.nl.
Daily Minutes Podcast. Whoever hears this is crazy.
En microfoon naar retour.
This is Slow Scan Radio. My name is Peter John. Today we do a very special edition in which we will start half an hour early. We will broadcast our show and after 29 minutes our transmitter will go down for 1 minute, after which we will start the show again from the start but with a different antenna, with much different radiation pattern and possibly also a different range. Our request to you as a listener is to tell us the difference where you are between both antenna constellations. So please send your reports to x@xdv.me, xray@xraydeltavictor.mikeecho. You can find the address, including info on what software to use for both SSTV and data reception, on our website, which is www.slowscanradio.com, www.slowscanradio.com. So this week you have two chances to get the reception of all images right. This week we have a lot of pictures, 16 in total, and much less data than the other weeks. We will begin with a summary in MFSK 64 of all SSTV standards we will use in order of appearance. After that we will send all the images, and after the last one we do a summary with explanation and copyright info, just like last week in PSK 63R with 20 carriers. PSK 63R with 20 carriers. All data in MFSK 64 and PSKR this week will be at 1500 Hz. 1500 Hz. Shortly after this, our transmitter will switch off for 1 minute to enable us to switch antennas. The one we used last half an hour and the antenna we will use next half hour. Please send us your reception reports for both antennas at x@xdv.me. Slow Scan Radio is copyright 2018, excluding rights of featured items and any music. Website is www.slowscanradio.com. Mail address is xray@xraydeltavictor.mikeecho.